This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 97-year-old Gene Leonard of Chula Vista, California. He grew up in Kansas, enlisted in the Marine Corps, and was at Eva Field on Oahu on December 7th, 1941. We heard how he experienced that surprise Japanese attack and also heard about some of the work his mechanical brain allowed him to do, keeping aircraft in tip-top shape. When we left off, he was stationed at Miramar in mid-1944. His wife was expecting twins, and he had orders to go to Oregon. But his commanding officer looked out at an empty shell of a giant cargo plane and saw a reason to keep Gene around San Diego.
The CO says, stay and take care of your wife. Make me an airplane.
So how do you make him an airplane?
Three-bladed prop. R5C1. First model.
Now, you just handed me a picture. And it says, this R5C1 Curtis Commando number 82 was the first one delivered to the Marines on the West Coast. My squadron was ordered to move from Camp Kearney, Miramar Naval Air Station, now to Corvallis, Oregon. My wife was having twins. I was told to stay behind and take care of her and then make a flyable R5C1. It was stripped of parts and couldn't be struck from the records. I made three trips to Reno in an R4D1. We visited their salvage yard, and I told a Navajo Indian the parts I needed. The next morning, the parts were aboard. This was all unknown to the Army, and you test-hopped this R5C1 in September of 44 and put it into commission. So basically, you found a bunch of spare parts and turned a shell of an airplane into something that could fly?
Made it fly, and then I test-hopped it. That airplane now, it's at Pensacola, Florida, in the Navy Museum, right now.
That very plane. And you're the one who put it all together?
I'm the guy that put it together.
And the first one that flew it? So when you say you test-hopped it, what does that mean and where'd you go?
Over Bear Bar.
And you weren't certified to fly?
Oh, yeah, I'm checked out to fly, but I've never got my gold wings out of Pensacola.
You flew that puppy, made sure it was going to be flight-worthy, and then you delivered
it.
Right.
And when I got through, my co-pilot, he says, you've sure done a good job of it.
What was the most challenging part of that whole process? Because that took you a few months.
Getting the parts to put it back in commission.
And how did you find them?
Well, the Army had cracked quite a few of them up at Reno. It was where they were training to go for the fly in the hump and all that. You see, they cracked up quite a few of them up.
So it's just like going to the pick-and-pull junkyard.
Yeah, that's right.
Just at a very different scale when you're talking about a 16-ton plane that can carry 12 tons of cargo. The photo of that plane that Gene built and shots of this 97-year-old then and now are at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. That was September of 1944 when you finished putting together that R5C1. That means it was almost another full year before Japan surrendered. So what did the Marine Corps have you doing for the rest of the war?
After I'd done this, they request me to take over as leading chief of the ferry sections for the R5Cs. According to the records, I sent 180 of them overseas. Never lost a one.
That's pretty hard to believe. 180? You're 180 for 180.
Well, I was in charge of the ferry section, and when the war was over, my lowest rank come around and shook my hand. He says, sorry, I couldn't take a right. I'm FBI. His job was over. The war was over. He worked for me.
So he was just keeping an eye on you?
Yep.
And when you say you sent 180 of them over there, something tells me each one of those was kind of like your baby.
I had to talk a lot of pilots into flying that airplane because they was kids afraid of the flight across the Pacific.
Did you celebrate a little bit when you heard that the war was over?
Well, naturally. I'm not a drinker, though. I've never been much for alcohol.
What did it mean to you, though, having been there when it started? I mean, you were one of the first guys the Japanese shot at on December 7th. And now to know that this is all over, that this threat has been defeated and freedom prevails.
Well, to me, we set United States up as the best country in the world. And sometimes I wonder about today, because we got, to me, too many things going wrong. Our government has got too big, way too big. We're not really like we was, freedom country. We've allowed too many things to happen. Now the government's grow too big. I'm against that part.
What are you most proud of?
Putting our country up number one of the world.
Have you been back to Pearl Harbor?
Yes. I've been back there since the war.
What emotions or thoughts do you experience when you're there, say at the Arizona Memorial?
Well, it's just that how bad war is. That's all part of it. It will always be that way. Just what happens to the world. So far, we've been a leader of the nations, but I just wonder how long it will last.
Well, and is there anything that we can learn from the time you lived through, a war that you were in from beginning to end, and how America responded? Is there something that you saw then that you think we could benefit from today?
Well, all war is hell, anywhere you figure it, and it's going to be that way. The Lord have to come back and save us from it. That's otherwise, they keep destroying themselves.
And I get the sense that you feel he saved you during the war or protected you.
Well, I'd say the Lord has more charge of anything than anything else, so that's probably it.
And apparently he's not done with you yet, because you're 97 and still going strong. What's your secret?
Well, it's just one of them things.
I see you wearing your camo today, and I know you've got that mechanical brain, so you're probably always fixing something. What do you spend your time on these days?
Well, I've tried to increase gas mileage. And I've been right. I got an old car back there, and I heat the fuel as it is fed into the engine. Now it's on to fuel injectors, and I'm waiting for that to come out. I use it with a throttle body injection, increased 25%. But I done that with regular carburetors 40 years ago, double the gas mileage. But there's always things come along.
Yeah.
But I've been mechanical, and I think mechanical.
I can tell. One more thing. I see right here in front of us your Pearl Harbor Survivors Association hat, and I'm sure that every December 7th you get together with other survivors. But every year that number gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
It's getting pretty small.
You're one of the last ones left.
Yep.
So with that in mind, what are those of us who weren't there, who weren't alive on December 7th, 1941. What do we need to know about that day, and why does it still matter?
Well, you pretty much have to keep yourself strong. But here's another thing. Our forefathers of this country was pretty smart. We the people. Think about that.
And in the face of that threat after Pearl Harbor and that rallying cry of "Remember Pearl Harbor," we the people all got on the same page and did something pretty spectacular. Is that something that you're proud of, to be part of what they call the greatest generation?
Right. All right, that's part of our country. That's how our country's made.
You have any plans for when you turn 100?
When the Lord takes me, I'm ready.
But you're not in a hurry.
Nope, I'm not in a hurry.
Well, sir, I just want to say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for sharing a little bit of your story with me. And I'm sure that it's meant a lot to a lot of people to hear your story over the years, especially on December 7th. Anything else that you want people to know?
Just like I said, we the peoples is the most important, not the government.
So you mentioned that you and your first wife were married 54 years, and now you and June have been married 17. And I don't know if I'd call it a second honeymoon, but you two just had a pretty big adventure a few months ago. Tell me about your honor flight experience.
Well, it was quite an experience. Of course, I've been back to Washington before in June. Done duty in Washington during World War II.
She was a WAVE and stationed in Washington.
That's right.
Well, you had a big surprise when you got there?
That's the surprise was her kin already there. to meet us. And
so with the Honor Flight program, each veteran is matched up with a guardian to take care of every need along that journey. There were people helping the Leonards on the way to Washington from San Diego, but when Gene the Marine and June the Wave arrived in D.C., they were surprised to find out their guardians would be her grandson and great-grandson. June, did you have any inkling that something like that might happen?
I had no idea. When I saw him, I started to cry because I hadn't seen him for so long, and I hadn't seen my great-grandson for at least 8 years. He's 14 now, and it was such a surprise. I had to sit down. I said,
and I bet you and Eugene were the only husband and wife veterans on that trip, I bet.
Yes, we were.
You were probably big celebrities.
Well, I don't know if we were or not, but they don't have too many that are my husband and wife.
What did you get out of that experience? Everything that you saw and how you saw Eugene experiencing it too.
We were excited to see how Washington has changed. It was a lot different than when I was stationed there. So I was excited to see how things were going. We got to see everything that we wanted to see. Of course, we only had 3 days.
But those are three pretty action-packed days. The World War II Memorial, the Korean War Memorial, the Vietnam Wall, Arlington National Cemetery, where the Women's Memorial is. Also witnessing there the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And, of course, a pretty special one for Gene at the Marine Corps Memorial with that larger-than-life statue of the flag raising on Iwo Jima's Mount Suribachi. I'm sure you've heard your husband tell his stories a few times. What amazes you the most?
His memory. But at 97, he's lucky to be able to talk.
And he talks pretty good, and he's got that great smile. The National World War II Memorial for you, was that a meaningful experience to be there with other veterans and see that?
It's quite a thing, but this country's went on for quite a while now. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty great.
Not going to argue with that. And I know there are a lot of people listening right now who think you're pretty great. Gene Leonard, 97 years old, of Chula Vista, California. Check out the photos at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And join us again next time as we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.